The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Perdition. Down under. The other place. The bottomless pit. The netherworld. The abyss. The bad place. The underworld. Hades. Hell. We hear about it all the time. We hear people talk about hell as a place rife with fire and brimstone, and the frightened screams of eternally tortured souls, a burning lake of sulfur, a place of torment. Hell, we learn from Saturday morning cartoons, is the devil's domain, a place where the flames rise, and a multitude of demons plan dastardly deeds. Some of us also learned similar things from Sunday morning church services, where the idea of hell is understood, on a base level, as the place of darkness that exists in the absence of God. Those who have fought for their country can attest to what hell is as well. For them, the idea of hell is personified in war. The souls of those who wage war are never left unsullied from personal torment, and it's clear when you speak with them that they've seen worldly horrors in the most unearthly light. Whatever you might think is hell, though, it does take different forms for different people. It is a place whose existence is steeped in perception and intrigue, in the idea itself and how that idea can be reconciled with the reality that they have experienced. Often, it is spoken as a concrete location, as much as it is discussed as an ethereal resting place for the souls of the damned. Hell, it seems, is a place that one can find, just as much as one can be found in it. But hell, as we call it often, has another meaning. For many, it's a state of mind. Hell is where the mind goes to torture itself, and usually, it's more than just once. There are people every day who live in and out of mental war zones, and it's hard for them to reconcile benign reality with the hellscapes that their minds invent through warped perceptions. Physical, spiritual, mental, it doesn't matter, really. Hell is real enough for the people who go through it, and it often changes them. Sometimes going through hell burns off the bad parts. An experience that is especially harrowing turns an individual into a rock-solid, stand-up citizen who is sensitive and pensive to the point of benefit. It happens to many who grow up in dark conditions that force them to become a light for others around them. And many strong people you know today have come from hellish backgrounds. Their spirits are molten in the fires of desperation, and they come out strong like forged iron on the other side. Other times, though, going through hell brings a person closer to the edge of insanity and hopelessness. They break under the pressure, and in becoming careworn, their sensitive insides are exposed. They reach what they consider the point of no return, and some even take the final step off the ledge, plummeting themselves into the abyss that awaits them. It's hard to accept, but it happens too often to not recognize a pattern. People stumble around in the dark, and if it really gets to them, they may choose to end their lives than to spend it being chased by shadows. Between these two, it's clear that there's an effect that which we call hell has on humans. It changes them fundamentally, and in many ways these changes are irreversible. The experiences that people go through, after all, help to shape the person themselves. and it's often time that someone with a certain background can change drastically, once their experiences are different enough from their original ones. There is, of course, another type of person who goes through hell and comes out unchanged. There are those who make it their mission in life to drag others through misery to ease their own suffering. When they've had their bones licked clean by the flame of their own personal hell, they see fit to ensnare others into the web of despair, often feeding their own emotions and egos by leading these poor victims closer to the ledge. These people, however misguided, bring others down with them, simply on principle, and it's this principle that keeps hell busy and filled to the brim today. Some say the path to hell is paved with good intentions, but these people, in particular, have anything but good intentions on the mind. For them, it's all about causing more heartache for those that trust and believe in them. And unfortunately, these people are more common than you think. Devil We Know contains graphic content and intense subject matter. Listener discretion is advised. Everywhere we look, everywhere we go, every city, every town, every neighborhood, every street, there is a devil we know. This is Devil We Know, and I am your host, Aaron. Conrad Roy III, a smart and hardworking teenager from Massachusetts, came from a family that was plagued by abuse and bad examples of what life is meant to look like. His family was torn apart by divorce, and before that, he had witnessed and experienced abuse himself. One such altercation resulting in his mother being arrested for domestic assault and battery after she attacked his father in front of the kids. It wasn't just the mother who had violent tendencies, though. Conrad's father, victim though he was also an aggressor, and Conrad was allegedly beat by him. While often being berated by his grandfather, the life that Conrad lived was one of troubling signs all around. With all this turmoil at home, it's no wonder that Conrad was exhibiting signs of trouble coping with his life. Whether the majority of his depression came from circumstance, though, is unclear. As a lot of his warped beliefs were internalized for some time, he experienced debilitating anxieties when attending school. In videos later shown to the court in the case against Michelle Carter, Conrad voiced his very disheartening opinion of himself, an issue that surely sprouted from what therapists and family members alike as a clinical depression. In fact, Conrad had been prescribed medications to allow the betterment of his condition in whatever way possible. But as many people who are ill, mentally or physically, Conrad faced a long road to recovery. It was during this tumultuous time in Conrad's life when he first met his future girlfriend, Michelle Carter, on a vacation. Vacation is often time for family, for friends, even for love, and Conrad's vacations in Florida at one point culminated into all of these. Conrad, a boy whose family would always work on the water and play on the water, was at home on the East Coast, whether he was in his home in Massachusetts or down in Florida with his great aunt. When he came down one fateful trip in 2012 to visit with his great aunt, however, Conrad found something else to comfort him in his dark moods. He had been introduced to Michelle Carter, whose grandparents were friends with the Conrad's great aunt. They soon got to know each other over the trip, riding bicycles and learning that they had each come from Massachusetts, only an hour's drive away from each other. Their shared experiences led them to texting, and they began to stay in constant communication via this method throughout the years. Over the course of their relationship, which spanned nearly 3 years, Conrad and Michelle spent the majority of their communication online through email or by texting continuously. Although they took the liberty of continuing this relationship mainly through these remote channels, they soon felt comfortable referring to each other as boyfriend and girlfriend. Their shared similarities, consisting mainly of their deep-seated issues on the respected sides of the world of mental illness, seemed to prove enough to keep them interested and invested in each other in a way completely enabled by the electronic communication they kept going forward. It was through this set of similarities that the couple also forged their secret connection. For although people knew of their communication between themselves, many were not aware that each child had experienced their own personal torments, each ending in hospitalization and medication with antidepressants. This private, shared experience of theirs became the cornerstone and the turning point for a relationship that was anything but conventional. In fact, their treatment of each other and their own issues turned out to be quite deadly, all on its own. From the get-go, Conrad and Michelle shared a different type of connection. That kind that most often exists as unique and familiar all at once within the macabre mentalities of disturbed teens. Conrad, on the one hand, had experienced attempted suicide multiple times, and it was clear from the way it was commonly discussed between the two that he often shared his self-proclaimed death wish with Michelle. Conrad's idea of the perfect couple, as another example, was, quote, Romeo and Juliet at the end, end quote, an allusion that he made to the teenage suicides that came about in the Shakespearean play when the two star-crossed lovers, steeped in the hormonal rush of oxytocin, believe that they each are unable to be with the other. Often romanticized by young, lovelorn individuals of modern society, this play's influence had a similar effect on Conrad and his perception of the relationship he had with Michelle. To Michelle's credit, when Conrad made this specific allusion, she is quoted as replying with, quote, oh yeah, fuck no, we are not dying, end quote. That's not to say, however, that Michelle didn't have her fair share of worrisome eccentricities. As often the case in teens and young adults, Michelle identified deeply with the world of film and TV, and for her the most relevant example of this was her ideation of the show Glee. Often in her conversations with Conrad, it was discovered that her choice of language and direct quotes from the show were prevalent. What was found to be really surprising, however, was the fact that Michelle's texts were also rife with quotes from interviews with the show's star, Lea Michele. Used contextually, these quotes would not have raised alarms for the unfamiliar, but the idea that Michelle's use of real-life actress quotes accompanied the typical TV show and movie quotes was disturbing. Filmmaker Aaron Lee Carr, who directed the new HBO documentary about Michelle's case, pointed out that this dual ideation may have sinister indications. The argument, in sum, goes like this. What kind of reality was Michelle really in touch with? If the quotes from both the show and the star are so prevalent in the discussions she had with Conrad, more importantly, however, is the fact that this fantastical view of teenage angst and death was perpetuated and exemplified by more than one medium for Michelle? You see, she was also found to have quoted on several occasions the film The Fault in Our Stars, based on the book by noted young adult fiction writer John Green. The film is yet another Shakespearean example, and death is a common theme that, in itself, does not carry any ill will. The problem in some speculations is the idea that Michelle and Conrad may have idealized such stories that emphasize teenage angst and premature death in a way that imprinted heavily on their relationship. Problematic fact of teenage love aside, there were other factors that contributed to the worrisome nature of Michelle's connection with Conrad. Their undying interest in the macabre had eventually brought them to the discussion of the devil, whom they both claimed to have seen on their own terms. While it's true that demonic presences are often dismissed as personal, emotional experiences with physical or psychological explanations, the discussion of such a subject between these two was taken quite seriously, and their notions of the devil's existence, his influence on their lives, and their respective spiritual destinations were all topics of discussion for the couple at length, and a creepy narrative that seems to only make sense in the context of delusion or a fictional novel. When mentioning that he had seen the devil after one suicide attempt, Michelle replied casually with a, "Me too, and how did you?" making a conversation out of the visions of his mentally disturbed boy, rather than discouraging continuation and diverting the conversation, as is recommended in such scenarios. Instead, they continued with Conrad sharing the devil's mission for him in particular. Quote, he was at the hospital one night staring at me. He told me to kill them all, end quote, a statement which was in reference to his family. It seems that Conrad's perception of reality was truly amiss, and Michelle didn't seem to mind, as Michelle told him that she'd seen him as well, and that she sees him often. The exchange that followed is a testament to the delusion that Conrad and Michelle seem to share. Conrad, maybe we're meant to be together. The devil brought us. Michelle, are we destined for hell then? Conrad, yeah. Michelle, but babe, even if I do end up going to hell, I'm happy it's with you. It seems that even in the midst of their needs for psychiatric attention, these two teenagers found a comfort in their disturbed personal worlds. With a portent laying on their relationship, although the two of them may have claimed it was the devil that placed it upon them. The most likely scenario, of course, is that it was their own doing. Although their homesteads were only an hour away from each other, it seems that they only met in person a handful of times over this 3-year period, and the majority of their relationship took place in the ether, with each of them able to romanticize their counterpart in the way that often sprouts from online-only relationships. In fact, most online romantic relationships developed by young adults result in distorted views from their partners and of romantic norms that cannot be experienced at a distance. This proved even truer in the case of Conrad and Michelle, because they had an even more unique situation. While Conrad had emerged from the midst of a tumultuous home life in which beatings and berating accompanied his anxiety and depressive state, Michelle had experienced the dangers of mental illness herself. From the age of 14, Michelle had received medication for exhibiting self-harming behaviors such as eating disorder and the practice of cutting herself. To an adult struggling with mental illness that results in self-injury, it is most often a red flag operation to pick up and start a relationship with someone dealing with the same thing. That is to say, it's inadvisable because when neither is rehabilitated toward healthy living, neither can act as an appropriate support system for the other. In fact, it's most often more important to focus on getting better first before attempting to add on the stressors and pressures of a romantic relationship in any degree. For kids, however, common sense is often left at the door, and teenagers who experience a myriad of mental health issues tend to gravitate toward each other because of the comfort afforded from similar or shared experience. In these scenarios, of course, proper perspective on the issue at hand isn't the focus. And these suffering adolescents tend to not target the root of the problem. The usual method of handling these feelings and the mental health issues they experience is through validation of each other's feelings, often to a detriment, given the dismal nature of the emotions that a teenager can experience when dealing with such a disease. Such was the case of Michelle and Conrad, whose line of communication was muddled already with their lack of personal contact. When in the throes of treacherous thought, Conrad's ability to turn to Michelle became, in its way, a crutch, since Michelle herself was not in a stable place as well. The exacerbation of Conrad's issues then began as he contemplated suicide. The fact that he attempted it more than once is not shocking, of course, but the idea that he was able to discuss the failures of these attempts casually with Michelle means that something was very wrong with their relationship and the way they dealt with their respective issues. It seems, though, that these discussions were not red flags enough for the kid to get proper help, and so he continued to get help instead from the source of comfort he was closest to, about an hour away, Michelle Carter. I will be right back after this quick message.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Are you a true crime junkie? Do you talk about true crime with your friends all of the time? And are there cases that have stuck with you for so many years because of geographic or emotional closeness? If so, then welcome to Fatalities. I'm Elisa Lucas, and this is the podcast where I explore true crime cases over tea with the help of my friends. Because without tea, friends, and good conversation, there's nothing but darkness and chaos. So grab a warm cup of tea and join me as my friends and I discuss the cases that have struck a chord with us and the related issues that might help us understand why such horrible crimes have occurred. The podcast is dropped every other Wednesday and is available on such podcatchers as Apple, Podbean, Spotify, and so much more. You may follow Fatalities on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, but don't forget that Tees is spelled T-E-A-S, because here is where we spill the tea.
As depressed as Conrad was, And as disturbed as Michelle was, there was another factor in the lives of both teens that asserted its influence on not only their relationship, but their respective ways of life. Even the use of suicide ideation as a means of escape. The factor was their parents. Conrad's parents, who had early put him through a messy divorce, had been a key contributor to his early suicidal and depressive behaviors, with inappropriate action throughout the household that would turn any normal and bright-eyed boy into a sad shell of a kid. In one account from Conrad, which he wrote in a statement to police, he stated that he had, quote, told Dad I would put a pan of mac and cheese away after a commercial of the basketball game. He said to do it now. He punched me repeatedly and pinned me down. I couldn't get up. His girlfriend said I was a piece of shit, end quote. His father then asked about the statement, expressed shame, but said that things simply got out of hand and that they both fought with each other. He said to the police in regard to this that he would do it again the same way. So continued the story of Conrad. From the arrest of his mother for domestic assault and battery to the physical abuse he received from his father, Conrad's home life was filled with violent parental behavior, a trait that surely coincided in many ways with the anxieties and thoughts of self-harm that had steadily grown on Conrad. It didn't help, either, that Conrad's grandfather was consistently assigning verbal abuse to Conrad as well. And it shows. Conrad had recorded videos in which he discusses his internal beliefs about himself as a result of his home life, stating that he thought of himself as, quote, no good trash, end quote. Saying that he will never be successful, never have no life, never have kids, never learn. His inner criticisms did not fall on deaf ears. He not only knew that he felt this way about himself, he also made conscious efforts to escape that thinking. In fact, during the videos in which he describes his feelings, he also mentions the way that he wants to feel about himself, and the fact that he wants to be able to interact normally. He stated that he had a lot to offer, and his conscious mind understood that the things his mental illness made him feel every day were wrong. He just didn't know how to stop feeling that way on his own. It was clear, though, that with the interactions of his parents, that he wasn't getting the support he needed. In fact, after his first episodes of depression, he was prescribed medication that is widely known for increasing suicidal thoughts in teens and young adults. The truth about this medication, citalopram, was ruled speculative in the court case that followed his death. However, the fact remains, the dismissive ability to resort to these medications without extensive follow-up was yet another contributor to the actions that led to Conrad's early demise. In the wake of Conrad's life as a proverbial punching bag for his own family and his own thoughts, he had regular contemplations of suicide. The idea had been floating around in his head since the downpour of issues ensued between his parents. However, now that he had a way to voice his thoughts with Michelle, he was able to progress emotionally towards his goal. Of course, Michelle spent a majority of the relationship talking him off the ledge. At times, it was his ideation of the act, which was evident in his romantic outlook on stories like that of Romeo and Juliet, the forlorn couple who takes their own lives as an alternative to living without each other. His mention of these characters was directly referring to their suicides at the end of the play, a detail that initially did not sit well with Michelle. At other times, Conrad actually made clear his intentions through more than just thought. He talked about his needs with her, who acted as his voice of reason for more than 2 years. Although Michelle had been plagued with her own fair share of misfortune and antidepressants, she saw right through his disguised cries for help, and she discouraged his contemplations to pull off the stunt. When he turned 17, he actually took action, swallowing an overdose of acetaminophen, most commonly known as Tylenol. He had been attending a treatment program in an attempt to get a better handle of his clinical depression. The pressure from this recent admission into Fitchburg State had most likely been a large stressor, and for him the pain of his state became too much. He did not return home that night, and Lynn Roy, his mother, worried that something had happened to him. She called the police, and she learned that he had been hospitalized after talking with a girl from the treatment group, who found out about the pills he'd swallowed. This was only one of multiple attempts that Conrad made on his own life, after one of which Conrad experienced the discussion with the devil that he mentioned to Michelle in later texts. It should have been clear then to Michelle and to others on each new occasion that Conrad's welfare was at stake in a way unforeseen by his parents and doctors. However, the warning signs were not taken seriously, and the only action taken was the continuation of the life-endangering medication that enhanced his suicidal urges. It was only afterward that Conrad told Michelle the following, quote, "Overdosing on pills doesn't work," end quote. He explained that the only way he could kill himself with pills was by overdosing on sleeping pills. Michelle later on helped him discover a much more efficient form of self-termination. And this method, she assured him, would be foolproof. It was time, Conrad decided. His need to leave the painful world he lived in grew too strong. And after 4 attempts on his own life, he found comfort in the idea that Michelle, his girlfriend, had given him for ending his life. She mentioned to him the idea of suicide by gassing, carbon monoxide poisoning, an idea which she said required little thought and effort, with a much higher chance of success. It's unclear when Michelle's change of heart brought to her aiding Conrad in his quest, but eventually, instead of making the protest she was used to, she began taking his desire seriously, suggesting that his parents would, quote, be able to accept it, end quote, should he decide to go through with it. She said that he was obviously in a bad place, and she claimed to believe that his suicide would mean bringing an actual end to the pain that racked him day and night. To this end, she began to give him direction, and together they planned out Conrad's untimely demise. It wasn't long, though, before Conrad found himself questioning the plan. That's when things get even stranger than ever between them. As Michelle began to berate and ride Conrad for not going through with the plan they had set out, on several occasions throughout this period, it was clear that Conrad was having second thoughts. Michelle, for her part, continued to convince him that there was nothing anyone could do now to save him, and that the only thing he could do now was to kill himself. With assurances that she would look out for his family, Michelle was able to talk Conrad into driving to a Kmart parking lot in the daytime, when there would be, quote, less time to think, end quote. He would start a generator, and he would attach the hose into the window of his vehicle and breathe in the fumes, drifting into blackness. The plan, though, was stalled several times, through which Michelle stood as a constant reminder of his desire to kill himself. In the preceding hours of Conrad's demise, they had a text conversation about the day ahead of him. The following is a portion of that conversation, in which Conrad and Michelle discuss the finality of his plans, and when Conrad finally decides at Michelle's behest to take his life. Okay.
Conrad, hey, you there?
Hey, sorry, I fell asleep.
It's okay. Why haven't you done it yet, though?
I'm too messed up to.
What are you talking about?
My head.
You can't think about it. You just have to do it. You said you were going to do it. Like, I don't get why you aren't.
I don't get it either. I don't know.
So I guess you aren't going to do it then. All that for nothing. I'm just confused. Like, you were so ready and determined.
I'm gonna eventually. I really don't know what I'm waiting for, but I have everything lined up.
No, you're not, Conrad. Last night was it. You keep pushing it off, and you say you'll do it, but you never do. It's always going to be that way if you don't take action. You're just making it harder on yourself by pushing it off. You just have to do it. Do you want to do it now?
Is it too late? I don't know. It's already light outside. I'm going to go back to sleep. Love you. I'll text you tomorrow.
No, it's probably the best time now because everyone's sleeping. Just go somewhere in your truck, and no one's really out right now because it's an awkward time. If you don't do it now, you're never going to do it. And you can say you'll do it tomorrow, but you probably won't. Love you.
Thank you.
For what? Are you awake?
Yes.
Are you going to do it today?
Yes.
Like, in the daytime?
Should I?
Yeah, it's less suspicious. You won't think about it as much, and you'll get it over with instead of waiting until the night.
Yeah, then I will. Like, where? Like, I could go in any enclosed area.
Go in your truck and drive in a parking lot somewhere, to a park or something. Do it now, like, early.
Didn't we say this was suspicious?
No, I think night is more suspicious. A kid sitting in his car. Just turn on the radio and do it. It won't be suspicious, and it won't take long.
All right, I'm taking Holly for a walk.
Okay.
I don't know why I'm like this.
Sometimes things happen and we never really have the answers why.
Like, why am I so hesitant lately? Like, 2 weeks ago, I was willing to try everything. And now I'm worse, really bad. And I'm not following through. It's eating me inside.
You're so hesitant because you keep overthinking it and pushing it off. You just need to do it, Conrad. The more you push it off, the more it will eat at you. You're ready and prepared. All you have to do is turn the generator on and you'll be free and happy. No more pushing it off. No more waiting.
You're right.
If you want it as bad as you say you do, it's time to do it today.
Yep. No more waiting.
Okay, I'm serious. Like, you can't even wait till tonight. You have to do it when you get back from your walk.
Thank you.
For what?
Still being here.
I would never leave you. You're the love of my life, my boyfriend. You're my heart. I'd never leave you.
Aww.
I love you.
I love you too.
When will you be back from your walk?
Like 5 minutes.
Okay, so are you going to do it?
I guess.
Well, I want you to be ready and sure.
Smiley face.
What's that mean? Haha.
I don't know. I'm freaking out again. I'm overthinking.
I thought you wanted to do this. The time is right and you're ready. You just need to do it. You can't keep living this way. You just need to do it like you did last time and not think about it and just do it, babe. You can't keep doing this every day.
I do want to, but like, I'm freaking out for my family, I guess. I don't know.
Conrad, I told you I'll take care of them. Everyone will take care of them to make sure they won't be alone and people will help them get through it. We talked about this. They will be okay and accept it. People who commit suicide don't think this much. They just do it.
I know. Thinking just drives me more crazy.
Exactly. You just need to do it, Conrad, or I'm gonna get you help. You can't keep doing this every day.
Okay, I'm gonna do it today.
Do you promise?
I promise, babe. I have to now.
Like, right now?
Where do I go?
And you can't break a promise. And just go in a quiet parking lot or something.
Okay.
Go somewhere you know you won't get caught. You can find a place. I know you can. Are you doing it now?
Still have no clue.
Not finding a place to go isn't an excuse.
I know where to go.
Where?
A park and ride.
Ride?
That's what it's called, like a parking lot.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Are you going now?
Either that or go to the beach.
Why would you go to the beach?
That's where my mom's going.
I thought you were just going to do it.
My mom's making me go. When I get home, I'm going to do it.
Okay, promise? I'm going kayaking anyways.
You love kayaking.
Yep, something I wish we could have done.
Make sure you take your son kayaking.
Of course I will.
Good, what's up?
Kayaking.
Still?
Yep, but I'm done now.
I love you so much.
I love you forever.
I'm in the worst pain right now. Like, it's unbearable.
I think it's time to do it now, then. Do you agree? Conrad?
I'm still at the beach.
Oh, okay, sorry. Let me know when you're leaving. Sorry, that was my friend who called. She wanted to know if she could borrow my bike because hers has a flat tire.
It's all good. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
I'm determined.
I'm happy to hear that.
I'm ready.
Good, because it's time, babe. You know that. When you get back from the beach, you gotta do it. You're ready. You're determined. It's the best time.
Okay, I will.
Are you back?
No more thinking.
Yes, no more thinking. You need to just do it. No more waiting.
On way back. I know where to go now.
Where?
A parking lot. There's going to be no cars there at 9, so that's when I'll be found.
Okay, perfect. When will you be home?
10 minutes. Haha, that's perfect?
Okay, and well, yeah, I don't know.
Like, I don't want to kill anyone else with me. When they open the door?
You won't.
They won't know it's odorless and colorless.
You're overturning. They will see the generator and realize you breathed in CO.
Should I keep it in the back seat or front?
In front. You could write on a piece of paper and tape it on saying carbon monoxide or something if you're scared.
I was thinking that, but someone might see it before it actually happens.
Well, wait. The generator is going to be on because you'll be passed out, so they'll know you used carbon poisoning. Dead. It's not loud, is it?
Not really.
Okay, good. Are you going to do it now?
I'm home.
Okay. What?
I don't know. I'm stressing.
You're fine. It's going to be okay. You just got to do it, babe. You can't think about it.
Okay. I got this.
Yes, you do. I believe in you. Did you delete the messages?
Yeah, but you're going to keep messaging me?
I will until you turn on the generator.
Okay, well, I'm bringing my sisters for ice cream.
So will you do it when you get back?
Yep, I'll go right there.
Okay.
Love you.
I love you so much.
Hey, what are you doing?
Nothing really, just resting.
Okay, I'm procrastinating.
Yeah, I know. Are you back?
Yep.
So it's time.
Oh, it's been time.
Are you going to do it now?
I just don't know how to leave them, you know?
Say you're going to the store or something.
Like, I want them to know I love them.
They know. That's one thing they definitely know. You're overthinking.
I know I'm overthinking. I've been overthinking for a while now.
I know. You just have to do it like you said. Are you going to do it now?
I haven't left yet.
Why?
Leaving now.
Okay, you can do this.
Okay, I'm almost there.
Okay. Please answer me. I'm scared. Are you okay? I love you. Please answer. You're at your dad's. Camden told me. I'll get you help soon, I guess. I thought you actually did it.
The aftermath in which Conrad was found dead in the parking lot of that Kmart in Fairhaven, Massachusetts, was a gruesome sight. His death, abrupt as it was, caught his parents off guard, as they thought he was doing a lot better, and had his whole life ahead of him. The reason that they were so surprised, even after all the issues he had exhibited in the past, is uncertain. The dangers of a child who has repeated suicide attempts is obvious, but the blindness to his needs and his disturbed state of mind cannot be explained away. What does merit explanation, though, is the involvement that Michelle had with Conrad's death, a fact that was discovered after the suicide. In February of the next year, Michelle Carter's indictment for recklessly aiding in Conrad Roy's suicide began, and in the wake of the arraignment, the court issued an order for Michelle to not update her social media. Against these wishes, Michelle's mother, Gail, continued to post on Michelle's social channels for her. When these posts included a trip to Disneyland and pictures of Michelle in a prom dress, the Roy family expressed their discomfort at the broken court order. The trial process began to move forward after the removal of a district attorney from the case who was related to Conrad distantly. Although stating that Michelle and Conrad were two disturbed individuals, Lynn Roy expressed during this time that she was unsure of what she wanted to happen to Michelle, as it was clear to all that she could have aided in stopping Conrad from killing himself. After this, Michelle was ready for her trial, where she waived her right to a jury of her peers. In her trial by judge, her representatives appealed on her part by stating that her text conversation with Conrad was not what spurred his pre-existing desire to kill himself, and that her speech was protected by the First Amendment, given there was very little precedent for defendants who were prosecuted for encouraging someone else's suicide. The judge declined this, and it was found and proved that Michelle had not simply texted, but called Conrad, encouraging him to get back in the truck and kill himself. On this information, Michelle was found guilty of involuntary manslaughter. On the following reason, Conrad, who had stepped out of the vehicle after deciding not to perform the suicide, had broken the chain of self-causation with his actions. Only when he got on the phone with Michelle did he decide to go through with it. And on this fact, Michelle was found guilty of assisting the suicide directly with her wanton and reckless encouragement. With the eventual exhaustion of all of her options in court, Michelle was eventually met with a sentence of 15 months in prison, able to suspend the rest of her sentence, including 5 years of probation, which was to follow the rest of the original 2.5 year sentence. Finally, in February of 2019, Michelle began to serve her sentence, while her lawyers moved to petition just over 2 weeks ago to review the case with Supreme Court. Her argument that her actions were protected by the First Amendment have formed the basis of their movement. On the other side of the case, there's a bill in the works that is referred to as Conrad's Law, inspired by the nature of this case. This bill, should it pass, is meant to codify the actions of someone encouraging the suicide of another as a criminal offense, in an effort to protect those hurting enough to be swayed by such actions like Conrad Roy. Likewise, Michelle and others like her would be found guilty of this type of assisted suicide, and punishment would be made to reflect that decision based on court precedent. In all, the Michelle Carter case has swept up the likes of legislative and judicial officials in a shockwave that has affected the way we view our legal system. In time, it may be true that others like Conrad can and will be protected by the sanctions that eventually would help cases like this, in the hope that their stories may continue where his ended in tragedy. It's not really a mystery how Michelle got Conrad to kill himself. He was already in a disturbed state of mind, and the only person who knew his innermost griefs had readily supported him in his decision to end life after years of attempted suicides and of Michelle's attempts to get him to stop. What is a mystery, however, is why she suddenly snapped to the decision that helping him to do it was the right thing to do. Whether she believed he was suffering greatly, or whether she simply had a malicious intent, the result would have been the same in her upset mental state. Conrad had entrusted his deepest, darkest needs to someone who, like him, had struggled with mental illness and suicidal thoughts. Though she did not kill herself as well, it's clear that her mind was unstable just like his. And to have allowed this deep connection between two disturbed teens is a serious issue that may have been addressed early on as well. But hindsight is, as they say, 20/20. For all else, the eyes of the public are looking forward. The first hope of all is to see what becomes of Michelle Carter in her case of the freedom of speech or freedom of suicide encouragement, to which she truly believes she was entitled. And although this is not the first case of encouraged suicide, not by a long shot, as the history of the internet proves, the public is also looking forward to seeing the Michelle Carter case become a cornerstone in the decision to bring forth Conrad's Law as a sanction against heinous acts. Though it is widely accepted that these teens are cruel, the introduction of a law that helps mitigate the cruelty would be a simple and strong step forward to creating a safer world for those struggling with the myriad of symptoms of mental illness. Perhaps when looking at it from the right light, mental illness itself is simply one more devil we know. Thank you so much for listening to Devil We Know. If you recognize that voice portraying Michelle Carter in that text message exchange, that's because that's Lindsay from the Corpus Delicti podcast. I want to thank her so much for taking the time and helping me out with this project. You can definitely check out their podcast on any podcatchers out there. I want to give a shout out to Luke, who gave us a 5-star review and a wonderful review on iTunes. While you're listening to the podcast, just please hit the 5-star. Just a few quick notes here. We have recently launched a website at devilwenowpodcast.com. You can find links to all the shows. There are t-shirts available to order, and there's also a donate button. I will use any and all donations to help improve this podcast. I will also send you a sticker as well. And for this podcast to grow, your donations are much needed. No amount is too little. I would also like to give tons of credit to one of my writers and researchers, David Young. I can't thank him enough. Please follow him at Twitter. You can see his handle in the show notes. We will be back next Friday.
Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.